Welcome to the Golf Industry Uncut. On-demand audio for the world of golf like never before. Exclusively on THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Network. Now, here's your host, JB.
Welcome, everyone, to THP Radio. I'm your host, JB, and today we have a new episode of the show called The Golf Industry Uncut. Each episode of Uncut will feature one of the great insiders from the golf industry, and they'll be placed in the hot seat to discuss equipment, technology, and the entire golf industry landscape. This week, Harry Arnett from Callaway Golf joins the show, and we have a special episode planned. THP is your new twist on on-demand audio in the world of golf, and the Golf Industry Uncut is your complete access to the equipment world that you're craving the info on. The way the show works is easy. Once the record button's pressed, there's no editing done till the show ends, so you hear it all. Our only rule is a simple one. Each guest must be accessible via social media. So, Harry, can you tell everybody how they can find you on Twitter?
I have no idea, but I think it's Harry Arnett CG.
Harry Arnett CG.
Yes, I welcome all THP interaction, porn bots, angry alt-right trolls, whatever you need. I'm right here for you.
That's appreciated. You know, you've already done Golf Industry Uncut, so we're going to do kind of a special show. And a lot has been made recently of release cycles and equipment coming out and everything else, and it's an internet phenomenon, quote unquote. So instead of having a fire away segment, which you've covered, we're going to get right into a conversation about golf equipment and releases. So my first question is, you know, it's that time of year. It seems that fall is release time, shiny and new, fun marketing, mixed with backlash. Can you talk a little bit about release cycles as a whole and what it means to Callaway and anything else as far as the industry goes? Like, how did 2 years become a norm? Like, what makes 24 months be a norm and not 12 months or 36 months or 18 months or 17 days? How did 24 months or 12 months become the norm?
Well, it wasn't always 24 months. And really, over the last several years, I would say Callaway and TaylorMade primarily, although I would throw Ping in there as well, started to be more on one-year cycles, and 1 year for drivers, so you'd have a driver launched every spring meaning January now, and you'd have irons launched at the same time every spring. And it wasn't up until maybe 2 or 3 years ago where we decided, Callaway, to not be in the releasing products every year at the same time all the time. And what we've tried to do at Callaway is to get more on a longer cycle time. So now, if you think of this year, we launched XR drivers in January, but we didn't launch, we didn't relaunch a Great Big Bertha driver during that same time. So we had tried to, over that same time period, pull apart our big two brands, X and then Big Bertha or Great Big Bertha in this case, pull them apart so they weren't launching at the same time, with the goal to get to every 2 years or so with drivers and every 2 years or so with irons. And we're kind of there now. And the reason that we did that was a couple things. Number one, it more closely matched people's replacement cycles anyway in both of those categories. And number two, it gave us an opportunity to really build some brands that we felt like we should build. X being one of them, Big Bertha being the other one, and give us an opportunity to really focus our attentions on how we would communicate, how we'd let people know about it, how we'd really try to excite people about what was coming, and understanding that for a lot of people, what appeared to be old news to us was still brand new news. And we typically started to get kind of tired of the same product in like June or July, but it really a lot of the country was just starting to open up and play golf. So so now we're in a two-ish, I would say, 2 year cycle on woods and irons, and I think that matches where Titleist is definitely. I think you'll see Ping moving again towards there, and then we'll see what our friends at TaylorMade do. But it makes really good sense if you can pencil out a way to keep sell-through going and to keep people excited about the product.
Okay, so that brings two questions. The first is a clarification, because like you said, you went to the two-year cycle, and we were speaking specifically of the Metalwoods line. You know, you went from Big Bertha irons to Big Bertha OS irons and XR to XROS. Does that mean you can still have new releases each year? They're just staggered. Or does that mean you're going to skip a year as far as releases go?
Yeah, we'll just stagger them, or in those cases, we'll do a little line extension to, as we did with XROS and BBOS was a replacement of Big Bertha, which came out
almost two years to the day.
So XROS was just the line extension off of XR, so adding to the line, I would say, and not the volume of XROS, in other words, didn't replace the volume of XR year on year. And we kept XR in the line in 2000 and this year, 16, when that was an iron that launched in 2015. And then Apex, the same thing. You'll see that two-year cycles before it gets replaced. So we're really trying to make it easier for golfers to kind of understand what's in our line, what's not in our line, when we launch stuff, when we don't launch stuff, and then try to get behind these products, because understanding that these are big-ticket items, and it's hard to – golfers aren't replacing their irons every year, nor should they think about it that way. But when we launch an update to an X iron, for example, then it should be significantly different than what people saw from the last time around. And same with drivers, especially. So if you think about XR 16 driver this year and what that looked like, et cetera, when the next one comes out, which will be sometime 2018, I guess, you'll see a product that's entirely different than the one you had this year. So we feel like that makes a lot more sense to the consumer, and it should make our lives at least a little easier here.
So that would be three driver lines if you include Fusion coming from V-Series and so on and so forth. So my next question about that is a little different. Now, there's smarter people than me out there. I'm talking to one of them. Let's say Callaway as a whole has 12 golf products. Why not release those products once a month, meaning, you know, XR released in January and so on and so forth, and then just do them each year or every 2 years so there's something fresh to discuss marketing-wise every single month? Is it a purchasing thing that's been looked at and said, hey, you know what, January is not a good month for purchasing, or I'm just speaking arbitrarily?
Kind of some of that, but you also have to follow people's normal adoption curves of how they participate in consumer markets. And typically, there's not a consumer market I know of that can move that fast so that people are understanding and move through an entire purchase cycle of a product in a month. So it takes a while for people to go through their understanding of what's coming out, a exploration of the features and benefits, and then going to try it. A lot of times people will go into retail or a trial environment, whether it's on course, and they'll try it, then they'll go home and they'll debate it. If you're like me, you have to convince your wife that it makes sense that you're going to spend a lot of money on something, and then you try to figure out, if she says no, how you're going to pay for it without her knowing about it. And all of that time can be 2-3 months sometimes. So we try to time that definitely for when the most people are in the market looking to buy a product, depending on the category. And so, you know, it doesn't make a ton of sense to spend a lot of your time and energy on launching a product, let's say, like now, if you wanted to launch a product right now. It doesn't make a lot of sense to do that in November because there's not a lot of people buying golf products. So you're spending the same amount of time and energy to do it when the demand's not really there yet. So we try to make sure that we're hitting those critical months, as you said, which in the United States is pretty much, you're talking about April through August. That's the season, and that's where 70% or 75% of all golf products are bought. And I exclude ball in that because ball typically stretches those tails out a little bit, but it's not that far off from what it is.
And, you know, which is kind of funny because the biggest golf states, that's the off season technically, and there's a lot of releases now in September. But I understand what you're saying. Now, With all that said, the PGA Show in January is a unique proposition now, because what used to be the place to introduce product, I don't know of a single company that really introduced, meaning the world hadn't seen anything about it yet at the PGA Show anymore. There is a fall show, but it's kind of more of a fashion thing, and nobody really attends that. Where does that stand for product releases for the future, or is it just a dinosaur model? And I don't mean the PGA Show in general, not that you're not going to be there or anything else like that. Is it a dinosaur model as far in terms of releasing the product that's not necessary anymore?
Yeah, I wouldn't say dinosaur. I just think that the use of that particular week at the trade show is significantly different than it was even 5-6 years ago, when that was a time when not only are you showing it to Greengrass customers from all over the country, but you're also getting an opportunity to show it to media for the first time all in one place. But that really has changed. So we don't really launch a product anymore that's launched at the PGA Show, because you don't really have to. It's not required. You can get enough eyeballs and attention on things without having to spend the type of money, frankly, that it takes to do something in an appropriate way for a brand like ours at the show. So for us at the show now, it really is just sort of a showcase of things that kind of people already know about. And we definitely have customers, Greengrass customers, that are there that haven't necessarily seen the product yet, because they weren't in season. So, you know, if we launch a product that's shipping in the spring, sometimes we wouldn't have seen a Greengrass customer if they're in, you know, upstate Wisconsin or something.
Is that a real place?
Yeah. I don't even know if you say upstate Wisconsin. Is that northern Wisconsin?
Upper Peninsula, or is that Michigan? We're going to make ourselves
I think
look
that's
stupid.
Michigan. I was thinking, you know, places that are under snow. I've imagined having watched enough games in Lambeau Field on TV that it gets kind of cold there in December and January. So not a lot of golf clubs are being sold, and not a lot of golf clubs are open at that time. I don't think any are. So we'll show whatever we've got at the show to people like that, and it's more of a convenience thing. And I think the pickle for us is, being a brand like Callaway, we can't just show up and have a tiny little presence. So we like to do things that are commensurate with our status within the golf industry.
Did you use any finger quotes or anything when you said that?
I didn't. I was leaning back, and I have a Nitro coffee that Jeff Newbarth brought. We sell these now in the cafeteria, which is kind of nice. It kind of looks like a Guinness. You ever had one?
Yes, I have, actually, from your cafeteria.
It's not bad. Oh, you did? They're not bad.
Let me talk a little bit about embargo dates, because we get the question a lot, which is, pictures leak, they get posted. Unless the product's out on tour, we try our best to take them down. We think it's appropriate. We would do that regardless of industry and not golf industry, and we do it regardless of company. What is the consumer to do? Because they're not really doing anything wrong. They don't know an embargo date. And what are there unspoken or actual spoken rules in your mind about protecting a brand, and why embargo dates are set instead of just launched? That was a whole mouthful to get to you.
I think what people have, let's break this down. And let's say there are two audiences. There's a mass audience and there's a niche audience. And if you consider those two audiences and then you layer them over our normal wholesale selling time, which if we're going to launch a product in, let's say we're going to launch a wedge in January, and we want to, we'll launch that to our sales force, our wholesale sales force that are out territory reps. We'll launch that typically in August or September, and during that time, or maybe October, August, September, October, they have to have the samples of the product, they have to have some materials of that product to be able to go show their customers who can see it, try it, demo it, understand what it is, plan their business to be shipped in January, February. Now, what happens a lot of times, what people see is, during that time, we ask our customers and everybody that gets a chance to not share information about the product, because we're not showing those products to consumers. We're showing those purely to a B2B audience. So think of if you're a, trying to take us out of golf here, if you're in a consumer electronics environment and somebody from Sony comes in and shows you their new TV, and you work at a Best Buy, are those still around? I think they are. Yeah, Best Buy, of course, still around. And you're working at a Best Buy, great retailer, you're going to be privy to information about Sony's product line way before anyone else. And you're still selling a lot of your current line in the Best Buy. Of course you are. So during that time, Sony will ask anybody that gets a chance to see the product to please don't share what you know about the product, because we're not ready to launch it. Meaning, we're not ready to necessarily talk to the consumer about it. We're not ready to answer questions about it.
And frankly, the store needs to still fulfill their current stock. And everybody says, you know, if a new product is coming in the next week, people aren't going to be jumping down to get the previous product.
Immediately devalued. And so we take that very seriously, that our customers don't want to let anyone know what's coming in the future before they're ready to start selling it in the future. And what you see a lot of times, and I'm not trying to be harsh here, what you see a lot of times are people that don't really understand the planning of the business on a horizontal scale. I'm talking about retail and Greengrass, that are more farther away from kind of the owning that business horizontally. And what they're doing is they're just excited about what's coming. There's probably some street cred that exists within the golf communities of being somebody that's seen it, that has access. Information is sort of the currency of the online communities anyway. And so that overexuberance multiplied times that street cred sometimes leads to these leaks. And not only that, but they generally are taking pictures that don't really display the product in its best way. A lot of times they don't look like what the real product is. We get a lot of questions, oh, is that real? Is that really what it looks like? Is that fake? So what? And who that's hitting is a niche audience. So that's not a mass audience. Now, in the mass audience, there are a lot of people that don't pay any attention to what's happening on THP and GolfWorks and GolfSpy. That they're really more consuming golf club information the good old-fashioned way. They're getting it from a Golf Digest or a Golf Magazine or whoever else, Golf Week. And their time that they'll be talking about a product will be much closer to what is our consumer intro date, or what people would call the embargo date, when we will release the full Monty of everything there is about that product, complete with pricing, what's the technology, when's it coming, what's the specs, multitude of images that are professionally done that really display our products in the best way, shape, or form. And so that's really hitting the mass audience. And plus, you have an entire infrastructure of journalists that are set up to be able to report on it. What those people don't like, and I totally get it, is when they're seeing the product exist before that embargo date or consumer intro date, and then they're not really allowed by us to comment on it or to talk about it. So then they have in their social extensions, which all of them now are required to engage with their readers in the social space, they now have that interlap between that overlap of the mass audience and the niche audience, and it creates a lot of problems for not just them and us, but also the people that, you know, are in the business of selling golf clubs. So it's one of those things that really has evolved also in the last several years. And I think from our standpoint, we recognize that that's a reality, that the way that we launch products into wholesale and the time that it takes to properly sell in our stuff is typically 60-90 days. And during that time, st- stuff's going to start leaking out and how do we deal with it. But we try to minimize that by continuing to impress upon those that have the privilege of seeing the stuff early that part of the privilege of seeing it early comes with the responsibility of not letting the images or the information get out there somewhere. So, and typically we won't really even say anything if we see anything out there. We like to try to find out where it came from so that we can continue to improve going forward. I think we've gotten a lot better at it, but we just, you know, we had a leak of an image that happened, I guess, a couple weeks ago, and it was one of those things, exactly what I mentioned, a kid that works on the floor of a retail establishment. One of our reps had a product that hadn't launched yet, asked if people wanted to see it, and these guys know they're not supposed to take pictures. The kid did, and his employer found out about it, and that's a big deal. If you think of any other industry, if somebody that works at an Apple store, for example, took a picture of the iPhone before it got launched, and that's Apple's own stores. I get it. I get it's not exactly
no, ruined, but the media but does get samples ahead of time in some spots, and if you do photograph it I, in different industries, regardless whether we're talking cars, electronics, or anything else, you will be terminated.
Yeah, I mean that's and as I said, you know, in another forum, that's a dumb reason to lose your job because you know that going in. If you took a picture of a new pair of Steph Curry shoes before Under Armour was ready to launch that to the public, and you are either an employee of Under Armour or you work at a Dick's Sporting Goods or somebody else, my guess is you're gonna lose your job over that, and you know that going in. And I don't like that. I don't like that can happen, but it's just the reality of it because there's so much infrastructure built up between retailer and golf company and media, et cetera, that it's not fair to the people that are trying to do this right to have that happen. Now, on the other hand, I don't mind it too much when people on the golf communities or out on social have seen the product, they talk about it. I generally won't really answer them directly. Sometimes I will if it's in person. But in that case, I know who the people are, and it's kind of one-to-one. They're not anonymous. I'm going to answer him because I know he's not going to be out there talking about the product or, oh, I learned this, or you know what I mean? So I usually don't get too wound up about that stuff, but it does annoy me when people that I know better than to post stuff they shouldn't post, that the images do it because they have it.
I learned something really important in that whole thing.
What did you learn?
That we can use the term street cred when discussing golf forums.
Isn't there? Don't you think that's part of it? That
oh, without a doubt.
Gain? Yeah.
Like so, I said, I mean, I've worked in other industries, and it's always been the same thing. It's, you know, Toyota's releasing a new Camry. Maybe not the Camry is the best example, but people want to get a quick picture, so what do? They wrap it in different things so you can't really see. It's the same thing with every product. If you get a sneak peek screening of a movie, you sign an NDA. I'm not talking about the ones where they do a survey and the director's there. I'm talking about a real sneak peek of a movie. You're signing an NDA that you're not going to discuss it. And that's just kind of the way it goes. You mentioned.
And I think we all understand that. And I don't think it's a huge deal in our industry, but it does end up, there definitely is a economic impact that exists. And it's not as big as it would be in Apple's case if they're deferring a month or two of iPhone sales or something because something leaks out. But there definitely is an impact with not having stuff come out at times that aren't not quite synced up for when you're ready to sell it.
One of the things that's intriguing about this is getting tour use, and tour validation is incredibly important for many golf products, Callaway no different. And to do that, it has to be USGA conforming, so it has to go to the USGA. Can you answer a question that I've always wanted to know, which is I understand the USGA needing to put a list out. Why do they have to include pictures of it?
It beats me, and it does seem a little bit antiquated, but it's the same thing I was just talking about too, and it's always these grainy, not very attractive database kind of black and white pictures that don't really show the product off very well. And usually what brands like us, like Callaway will do is we'll sync that up so that it goes on the list the exact same time as the consumer intro date. So people aren't really hung up on seeing a new XR driver on the list, and that's the first time they see it, because what they're going to see is a pretty uninspiring picture of a sole plate in black and white. They'll talk about what they see, what they don't see, how ugly it is, how awesome it looks, but really they're only responding to the worst possible way that you could take a picture from what is what really is just meant to be a database. But I don't really understand that unless it goes back to, that'd be a good question to ask somebody from the USGA, unless it goes back to the time when they had it there and there wasn't as much sharing and social access. If they were curious, if they saw something that was on the list or not on the list in a tournament, they could quickly look it up and see if it matched. But it does seem kind of old, doesn't it?
It just seems antiquated is the best way to put it. What do you make of the notion, and I know that the vocal minority exists with the internet more than just about anything. I call it a white knuckle kind of crowd, because you can just see their knuckles whitening as they're banging away on the keyboard, that every time a new product's released, regardless of length of cycle, it's, oh my God, the company's releasing another product. And I'm not just speaking of Callaway. It's across the board. You know, whether that's Titleist, Ping, Callaway, TaylorMade, Nike when they actually made equipment, Wilson, anybody in the world puts out a new product. But it seems to only happen with golf equipment. When I've talked to people who work in the fashion side of the business, people get excited about new products. Cars, everybody knows it's every year. Apple with the iPhone, it's every year. Why is golf products so much different?
I don't know. It always perplexes me, because nobody's forcing you to go buy anything. And I get the actual folks that just bought something and then something else comes out a week later. But every single retailer out there, if that happens, they'll credit you the difference when something price drops. So there's not really a penalty to the consumer, the golfer, when that happens. And I'm somebody that was actually the opposite. When I was in the market buying clubs before I worked in the industry, I loved seeing all the new stuff come out. And if a company doesn't do a very good job of, or good enough job of, telling you what's different and what's unique and what performance is going to be different from what came before it, then don't buy it. Simple as that. And that puts a lot of pressure on the onus on the OEM to do a good job of differentiating their product and coming out with something that is clearly different, that clearly has a different technology benefit to it, or isn't just an evolution of something that came out the year before, or looks the same, or has the same name. And that's another thing, the naming is a good signal of that. That's how we're trying to condition consumers to, hey, pay attention, this is new, this is not some 2.0 version of what you saw last year, this is a brand new thing. And I always love that as a consumer, and I love that in other categories too. I like, you mentioned fashion, I like seeing new stuff pop up on websites that I frequent, and I like to see new products come out. And if you're a car person, I think that's part of what makes the industry great, is you're going to see some different aspect to even long-standing franchises from one year to the next. And I really like that. I think that, as we've always said, what really becomes problematic is if you're not doing a good job of differentiating and you have a bunch of retail inventory out there. That's not good for your business. That's not good for your trade partners in retail. And ultimately, that devalues your brand and devalues the performance that you're putting into a product.
How has the internet changed the way you release products?
It's become the center of how we talk about stuff. And we think a lot about that journey that consumers, golfers make when they first learn about a product. And we want to create a unparalleled, totally distinguished, unmatched digital experience, both in terms of how we're talking about something, the way that we're creating interactivity on the learning about the product, the images, the fun stuff that we'll support it with, whether it's digital content or graphics or anything that creates that extended digital experience for people when they learn about a product, and then the engagement that can happen around it to be able to go back and forth with golfers either in the social space or on the community spaces, to be able to really feel like the golfer, we're giving the golfer everything they want and more, in not just an educational way, but in an entertaining way. And we want to train the golfer to, when you hear about a Callaway product, come to Callaway to learn about it and come to Callaway to engage with it. And I think we've done a really good job of that from one launch to the next. And I know it's a huge point of emphasis of mine, and it's a huge point of emphasis on our team and a huge point of pride on our team, that when you see a new product from Callaway and you go to CallawayGolf.com and certainly every other digital property that we touch, that it's going to be bigger and better and cooler than the product that we launched before. And that's the standard. And that's what people expect too, that they don't want to just see it thrown into some cookie cutter demandware, for those of you that understand the visual representation of that software package that basically everybody uses to design their website, some demandware template that looks identical to what you've had before. And when I look at brands, not just in golf but outside of golf, when they're just following the same templated approach, I get really bored, with those brands very, very quickly. So we hold that as our standard here, that we want to make sure that when we launch, let's say it's an Apex Iron in last year, that what you're going to get from a digital experience on the internet from that at launch and through the life cycle of trial, purchase, and post-purchase service is going to be 2-3x the experience that you had from the previous Apex launch.
So would you say a person is not just buying a golf club, they are buying a little bit of an experience?
Yeah, and they should. They should want that because there's a lot of choice out there. And I think that if you think about the way I just described it, from how are you going to learn about a product, how are you going to go try it, how are you going to decide whether you should buy it or not, so that whole purchase funnel thing, is you want to put your hardworking American dollar towards a company that's going to take that seriously and ensure that your purchase experience is met with not just satisfaction, but we exceed all of your expectations for not just what the product does, but how the company can interact with you to ensure that that's a product that you're going to love and play better with.
I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't ask, anything new coming out that you want to share with us?
Well, we are in the business of launching products, Josh. So, yeah, I mean, this is kind of a quiet time of year for us. We had launches not very long ago that are in market now with Fusion, which you mentioned, very specific for kind of high handicap, super forgiving product.
Steelhead.
Big Bertha OS and Steelhead, and those are all, like, doing really, really well. And then, you know, the fun stuff starts to happen as we turn the page into 2017. You can... I'm going to bet on us to launch something in 2017 early, probably, I'm guessing, in the driver category, that we think is going to set new standards for how people think about drivers. So we're really excited about that. It's I don't want to say too much about it right now, but I have been at this a little bit of time / bordering on a lot of time, and this is the most excited I've been for something. So I'm really excited about that. And obviously our momentum in the golf ball category is really second to none. We're the fastest growing golf ball company in the last 24 months. We have the number one selling golf ball off course Or as I like to say, Josh, wherever consumers are allowed to buy whatever they want and not have some sort of weird exclusivity, pointing them towards no choice, we have the number one selling golf ball in America in Chrome Soft, and it's really been a juggernaut. And then the thing I think that has to be told about that story, I'm going to say it every time I see you, is Truvis. How about Truvis?
Truvis is good.
It's unbelievable. If Truvis were its own golf ball company, it'd be about the third or fourth biggest golf ball company. So it's a lot of people out there buying Chrome Soft with Truvis. And then, as always, we have new products in just about every category that we think are going to be the best performing, coolest products in their category. They're going to help golfers play better. And as I always say, too, don't just take our word for it. Go try the stuff. If it doesn't, then don't buy it.
That's a good way to look at it. Now, I have a final question for you.
I thought that was your final question.
No, this one's a little more fun. We had Jason Finley on, as you know Jason Finley well. And I asked him to describe the Granddaddy, which is our event coming up together in December, in short form, to describe it to somebody who may not know what it is. Do you think you could do that in 50 words? What is the Granddaddy?
In 50 words, no. I don't think I can. But I'll tell you what the inspiration was for it. And I'll tell you that the barrier that we feel like we're going to try to clear every time that we do that event with you guys. And the inspiration behind that was understanding that we within the golf industry and Callaway specifically, we get access to all kind of cool stuff. And not just product, but we get access to just incredible golf playing experiences. And both in terms of playing in them and getting to go be a part of it. So, you know, the Masters, the U.S. Open, the PGA, the every major championship. Last year went to Scotland with the team to do some stuff at St. Andrews. So just these incredible golf experiences, not to mention getting to play and have access to just about every place you can imagine. And it is a privilege to be able to do that. It is something that we don't take for granted. And what we thought about when we launched this event, this is our fourth year now?
Yes.
Fourth year. Was we wanted to create an experience, a golf experience that people from THP, when they came and were a part of it, unlike and unmatched by any other golf experience they could ever have. That's the standard. And so with that comes, we need to create or find a venue that is going to be not just, we think, one of the top two or three golf courses they'll ever play in their lives, but will have the hospitality and accessibility and sort of embracing approach to the game that we do at Callaway. And we want to create that, have that venue there. And not only that, but we didn't want it to bounce around. We wanted it to kind of be the same thing. Because what we thought would be cool would be from year to year to year to have the alumni of the Granddaddy to be able to have a shared conversation about the golf course. And that's where the Hideaway comes in. So for people that are going to play in this event and have played in it, I'm certain that every single person would say that it checks all those boxes. It's one of the best places they'll ever play golf. It has the best hospitality of any place they've ever been. And it is as private as it gets. You can't just go play. You can't walk off the street. You have to play with a member. You have to know somebody. And it's awesome. Second thing about that is we wanted everything that touched that event to live up to that standard. It will be the greatest golf event you've ever been a part of in your life in terms of not just the venue, but in the way that you interact with your teammates, the way that you interact with your competition, in this case, that'd be us, and the memories that you create being a part of that 24-person experience. Will be something that you'll you'll remember, we think, for the rest of your life, and it will remind you why you love golf so much. So that those are the standards. And every that's more than 50 words, I get it, Josh. But and everything that we do that touches that event is meant to be for that. So and I promise you, as much of hard work it is for our side of the equation, we get as much out of it as people bring in that come from THP, our guests, because it truly is a highlight for us, not just year to year, but in all the years we do this. So
I was just out there.
That's why we call it the granddaddy. That's why we call it the granddaddy. It's the granddaddy of them all. I would say, how are we going to boil that down to 50 words left? We want it to be the very best golf experience you will have had and that you will ever have in your life.
Now, I was just out of your office last week, and your team was basically finalized. Is it still basically finalized, or is it official?
Well, we go through a pretty rigorous qualification process. There's, just like the Ryder Cup, we have 8 automatic qualifiers. In our case, the point system isn't golf-related. It's mainly around how much sucking up the team does to me. And usually, we have a core group that we know is going to come. And this time of year, we have some people that have a conflict. Scott Coral had a baby, so he may not be able to play this year because of being on paternity leave. But we generally have a pool of about 16, and we'll whittle that down to 12. And right now, we know who 10 of them are, and we'll be announcing sometime in the next week. We're trying to figure out a fun way to do it. Who the 12-person team is from Team Zoo Crew that will be taking on the mighty THPers. And it's just around the corner, right? Less than a month.
There you have it, gang. We want to thank Harry for coming on the show and talking to us in a candid interview discussing embargo dates, release cycles, and everything else. Stay tuned for more THP Radio and the Golf Industry Uncut each and every week on THP Radio, and you can find that at iTunes, Google Play, and anywhere else you get your podcast. So for myself, and of course Harry, thanks for listening. Bye, everybody.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.